Well, welcome to, I think we were trying to add it up. I think it's the eighth, is that right? It's the eighth Shed Time event. So I don't know how many stars you've got on your Shed Time badge, but I have eight. If you haven't, shame on you. But it's nice to have you if it's your first time or if you're an old stager like myself. Thank you for being here. Choose Life was the theme for this evening, and we're going to expand on that obviously as we go through, and it's going to take a similar format to what we had at the last event, which was a series of interviews and people sharing their stories about their lives and what lessons they may have learned. And part of this evening is also not just to receive a really nice talk that might make you go away and think, but part of this evening is also about what action may be required from you or what you might be prompted to take part in as a result of what you hear this evening. That's partly for our own good selves to get involved with things, but also to build our community here at Shed Time and walk alongside one another. So that's the idea. The guys in Waterloo, think of them. They're struggling at Clapham Junction, I think, from what I've been seeing on my emails this evening. So we're a bit light. So there will be more burgers at break time. So tuck in. There's always a silver lining. So let me just introduce. So the format of the evening, we're going to meet four people. Could be. And we're going to hear their stories. But first of all, I'm going to introduce Joe to you. Joe is someone that we know through our church, and she works with the vulnerable at the meeting room in Leatherhead, which is all summed up in this green brochure, which there are some over there if you want to get one after the event. And Joe is going to do some Q&A with some of the guys that she's met while she's been working there, and she'll talk you through a bit about what she does every day as well and how she gets involved. Yes, she is a woman. She is special just because she's a woman. But secretly, there might be other women speaking to us this evening. We thought we were ready for it. We're at eight. We're at number eight. Okay. So I'm going to hand over to Joe and to Nick, and she'll introduce Nick to you.
Thank you, Chris. So just to give you a little bit of background, as Chris said, I'm a trustee and a pretty full-on volunteer at the meeting room. The meeting room came out of what was Pit Stop, which closed when their building was destroyed. And we run drop-in centres across Mole Valley and Epsom and Newell as well. It's not something I thought I'd ever be doing, but the big man had other ideas, and I've been sucked into it. And I think before I was involved, I, if I'm honest with myself, had perceptions about the sort of people that might go to a drop-in centre. And I've been amazingly surprised by some of the people I've met. As I've gone through life, I've realised that some of the best people you meet are those that have been through the toughest times. And also that some of the most generous people you meet are those who have the least. And without doubt, my journey with the meeting room has been all about those two things, about some of the gems that I've met, people who have very, very traumatic stories to tell, who've been through bad times, who'll be very honest about making poor choices along the way. And maybe at that point when they might have made a poor choice, they just didn't have the friends, the family, the support networks that some of us are blessed with. So tonight is not about me. It's not about the charity. This is not an appeal for a charity. This is about sharing with you three stories from three individuals who have inspired me, and hoping that I can, through them, through their honesty and a bit, and being prepared to be very open about the journey they've been on, just help us all and challenge us all on our perceptions of people that we might meet in our lives. So, first of all, first on the stage is Nick. Have you been given a microphone, Nick? Is Nick?
Yeah,
he's got one ready to go. Right, so.
Am I on?
You on?
Is that working?
Yeah, it's working.
That's working.
So.
Cool.
So Nick has got a very interesting story to tell. So I'm going to intro you a little bit. Nick is a local man, went to Thurfield School, studied very hard, was a very, very focused on achieving. His family lived in Tyrrell's Wood, but not in one of the big houses, but all around him were people succeeding. So Nick was very focused on success. He wanted to be like that. You tried the 9-to-5, and that didn't really inspire you. And went on to run his own as a partner in a direct marketing business, turning over 10 million plus.
Yep.
So tell us a bit, Nick, about what life was like at that time. What was life like when you're in the fast lane?
Well, I'll tell you two sides of the story. The glamorous side. Oh, yeah, this guy's got a big fuck-off house. Excuse my French. Didn't mean to swear. He's got a swimming pool. He's got a Ferrari. He's got a share in a helicopter. He lands on the golf club at Kingswood when he wants to go flying with his mates. I don't like him. Flies all around the world, goes on Concorde, stuff like that. Right. Reality check. That sounds kind of cool down the pub. Reality check is getting up at 3 o'clock in the morning, going straight to work, getting 2 days' work done before the staff come in at 8 o'clock, 8:30. And at the end of the day, supposed to finish 5:30, 6 o'clock. No, it finishes at about 7, but it doesn't finish then. You go in your car. All the way home, I'm debriefing myself into my dictaphone. I go to the local pub, Kingswood Arms, for half an hour of decompression chamber. Didn't socialise with the boys. I sat there with my little laptop, had my half bottle of champagne, fiddled around, went 500 yards up the road to my house. Come in the front door. Hi, guys. Shh, EastEnders. How about hi, Dad? EastEnders. Oh, fuck that. Okay. Go to the fridge. Oh, thank God there's a couple of bottles of wine there. Go and check my emails, my faxes, old school faxes. And then, oh, your dinner. Oh, you just got home. It's your dinner. Okay, have my dinner. Then watch the news at 10, and then... Oh, I'm going like this. Don't forget, I've done a bottle of wine. I've had a meal. And then it's bed. I did that for 20 years. And because the business was 24/7, there was no... And I'm not a union man. You work when the work's there and you do the work. So when I would sell a software package for, let's say, 600 grand, I say to somebody, you can go to my competitor. He's equally good. I think we're better. But when you buy from my company... You buy me. Here's my home number, sex directory. Here's my mobile. I am there for you to service you and take care of your requirements. That gave me a business that I built from £20,000, which was a lot of money to get hold of at the time, to £10 million turnover. We were making nearly a million, three partners. We were making nearly £1 million a year profit, paying ourselves very generously. So... All I'm saying is the outside looked great. He's got the cars, the toys, the swimming pool. You know, he flies around the world. He's got gold cards coming out of his ears. That's not the reality. The reality was tons of hard work. Then the wife, I said, I gave you everything. You got free kids in private school, Range Rover, car phone. You don't have to want for anything. You never gave me one thing. I said, what's that? You. Ooh, didn't think about that. I didn't inherit loads of money. I didn't win the lottery. I went out and grafted for it. And now you're telling me off for giving you all the things that you said you wanted. I didn't choose the 1.7 mil house. You did. I wanted to make you happy. By the way, I love living there. I'm not knocking it. So, in summary... Oh, I didn't tell you about the giving up bit. But I might not go into that. All right, I think I've said enough. Never give in. It's the answer at the bottom of the line. Thank you.
So then, Nick, we've got this wonderful, successful lifestyle. As Nick says, on the outside, looks so glamorous and he's got all the trimmings. Hard work, and I think you get Nick's passion from what he's saying there, his passion for his drive and ambition to succeed. But then we hit the perfect storm. We hit the crash... Or the recession of the late 80s, early 90s, and you lose the biggest client the company has.
Norwich Union, 40% of our business.
40%
of 10 million. We've got 40 people on that account. What do you do then? No contracts. You're as good as your last job.
So can you sort of give us a little insight, Nick, into how it all came tumbling down?
Okay, so I've got three kids in private school. I've got two partners. They both got high-earning wives, no kids. I've got a zero-earning wife and three kids, all in private school. So they say, right, we'll cut our salaries in half. So salaries got cut in half. Then my mortgage went up £1,000 a month in interest alone. So mortgage went up £1,000, salary's gone down half. What am I going to do with the kids? So I had to take my son out of that posh school in Walton on the Hill and put him back into where I went to, Thurfield. Did him a power of good, to be honest. Brushed a few, knocked him into shape a bit more. Chinters, that's where he was, at Chinters. My girls went to Rosebery. And then, X number of months later, I'm homeless. I'm sleeping in Rosebery, not Rosebery School, Rosebery Park in Epsom. Did nearly 4 months there, but listen, this is a story. One day I went to get my benefits, some benefits. No big checks anymore. I've got 70 quid in my pocket. I'm sitting on a bench. I'd bought 10 cigarettes. I'm sitting there, and this chap comes up to me. What, mate, how you doing? I said, right. Do you want to buy something, mate? I said, what you got? Got a bit of green. That's skunk, cannabis. Got a bit of white. That's probably crack or coke. Probably not coke, probably crack. Got a bit of brown. That's heroin. I said, no, mate. And I've got some dimesy, Pam. So how many of those you got? So I've got a blister pack, mate, 40. So much you want for that? £30. No, 30 quid, mate. Got 40, 70 quid. 30 quid. Great. I was talking to one barman a bit earlier tonight. He had screw top lids on the wine. Comes back to what happened next. So I got 40 quid. Go down to Waitrose. It's about 7:15. I buy another packet of cigarettes. I buy two bottles of fine Chardonnay, not the sheep crap, about £12 a bottle, with screw lids. Go back up to Rosebery Park. Put my jacket on the floor. Just get all, empty all the blister packs. They're like a whole bunch of Smarties. Okie dokie. First bottle open. Cigarette now. Yep. Handful of Smarties. Whoosh, down the hatch. That won't hurt. I'll drink all of that. Take all of those. And I'll just fall asleep in a slumber. And I'll never wake up and have to deal with this shit again. Well, I did go to sleep. I woke up the next day. Quite late for me, no early mornings this one, about 9 o'clock, with a thumping headache, feeling even more depressed. I thought, you're such a failure. You can't even take 40 or 80 dimes a pound, two bottles of Chardonnay, that should kill an elephant. You're still alive. Well, it doesn't finish there. 3 days later, this leg went black. So I hobbled up to Epsom Hospital. They said, I told them the story. They said, you've got, it's not hypothermia, it's something beyond that. We're going to have to amputate your leg. Now, I didn't use the F word, but I was a bit... You could have cut my effing leg off. I've just been on the streets for 9 months, lost about 2 million quid, been beaten up on my teeth, 2 grand's worth of work on that, my phone stolen, my money stolen, and after all of that, you're going to cut my leg off? No, you're not. Didn't say it so aggressively, but that was what was going in my head. I toned it down a bit. They stuck me in one of these aero boots. I wore that for 22 months. Now, ladies and gentlemen, I don't do backflips in a nightclub. Not that I ever did. I don't dance on tables anymore. Not that I ever did. But I can walk. I wobble a bit, but I've still got my leg. So, thank you, God, for not letting me waste my life, which I could have done. And now, I'm back to where I am. My job, the way I see it,
he's not sticking to the script. I just knew.
No, that's why I'm on freestyle. I'm talking from the heart, that's
yeah,
why.
I know. He's a passionate man. I think the thing about Nick's story is obviously from what he's described, from going from that life to living on the streets for 9 months. And some of you may have seen him, because Nick shared with me that he did about 2 months at Ashley Cricket Club.
Yes, slept on the pavilion, because it had a roof over the edge, so I could keep out the rain.
And the bus stop in Ashton near the duck pond?
Yeah, guess what? The bus stop's only that wide, the little seats. You can't get 15 stone on that very well.
So, and although you didn't lose your leg, you have lost some toes, haven't you?
I lost three toes. But guess what? I don't mind that. It's not a problem.
But I think for at this point then, this is the bottom, this is absolutely desperation. Where are your friends and where are your family?
Well, when I had the swimming pool and a garage full of champagne, I had so many friends, you wouldn't believe it. You would not believe it. They phoned up on Saturday morning, roundabout, what are you doing today, mate? I knew what they were after. You're having a swimming pool party. You're having one of your barbecues. So basically, all those friends, when everything went tits up, I see them walking down the road. They walk on the other side of the road. They were too embarrassed to even say, hi, mate. Do you want a cigarette? Do you want a coffee? Heard you've had a difficult time. So they were fair weather friends. That's all I learned.
So
painful. It's painful.
From the bottom, we start to build again, don't we?
Correct. Because we don't surrender.
So do you want to just share with us how that started and that process of how you come from that level of desperation, where, as you shared with us, you tried to take your life?
All right. So I was then blessed by being put into a hostel in Leatherhead. Leatherhead Start, top of the high street. Basically, they saved my life. But I'm an early riser. So every morning, you could leave the building at 6 o'clock in the morning, but if you left before, you couldn't come back in. So I would go about 6 o'clock, I'd go out of the building, got a tenner on me, a newspaper, 10 cigarettes, 10 Marlboro Lights, and a Red Bull. I'd go down to the river, and I'd have the cigarette, and I didn't have an agenda, I just get out my notepad. I call it blue sky thinking. I think like IBM taught me, or IBM showed me. Think as big as you can, and then rein it back to reality. So I'd write on like a cigarette packet kind of notes, on scraps of paper, whatever I found. And then I went back to the hostel one day, I got all the bits of paper, and I printed them all out on hard copy. I called it Man with a Plan, 3 month goals and aspirations. Put everything on there, and it's gone on the back as well. I've now done about 90% of those. It started with, first one says, birth certificate. I had no ID. I had no driving license. I had no passport. I had nothing. Started from scratch. That's what the first thing it says. Thank you. Thanks for reminding me. All the way down to getting a place to live, getting a car. Outside in the car park is a very tasty, totally over the top Bluetooth, up to the eyeballs, turbocharged, little pocket rocket. To most people, it looks like a shopping car. It is 165 mile an hour turbo naughty car. Of course, I drive it very gently. I only use it for shopping.
I think and I first met Nick when he was living in the hostel and coming into us every day into the meeting room. And that process of sitting by the river every morning and offloading what he'd been through and actually just trying to process what you'd been through. And I'm going to share with the guys, we do emotional well-being classes every week. And I sat in one with Nick, and the lady who runs it had asked Nick to hold a cup of water. And we're all like, why have you asked Nick to... I'll explain it later, but Nick, you mustn't put it down. And Nick has problems with his right side anyway from an accident. It's pretty useless. So anyway, he's holding the cup of water, and we're about half an hour into the session, and it's shaking like this. And every time he goes to put it down, she said, Nick, I told you to hold the cup of water. Would you please hold it up? And we're like, why are you being so horrible? I'll explain later. And Nick is a very determined character. He never gives in. And after about an hour, Angie said to you, Nick, would you like to put that down? He said, oh, yes, please. He put down the cup of water, and she said, what does this feel like? And he went, I've let it go. I couldn't think of anything but the cup. While I was holding the cup, that's all I could think about. Now I've put it down. My hand feels light. I've let it go. And I think through this journey of getting yourself back onto some sort of normal life, there's been a lot of that letting it go, hasn't there?
I want to touch that with something else. There's a chap called Colin that's helped me. He runs a food place on a Wednesday. He said to me, when we were talking about a year or so ago, he said, Nick, I'll give you something to put in your head. Let it be, let it go. So I have a mobile phone. I type that in as a welcome note. So for about a year, every time I put my phone on, I couldn't fast forward that, but I'd have to read it. It took me about a year to actually say, I think I've let it go. I think I've let it go. It's all my resentments, bitterness, being perceived as being robbed by people I trusted. And, you know, a couple of million quid would have changed my life. But it happens. And I've actually, can honestly say to each and every one of you, I've let it go. No more drinking a bottle of wine to bury the pain or the anger, trying to control my emotions with alcohol. No, don't do that anymore. I did do that. I was pretty good at it. It's not something to be proud of, but I did do it.
And I think we've got a lovely, happy story now. So it was Nick's birthday on the 1st of December.
And nobody ever thought I'd get to that age, to be truthful.
63, I'll share that with you. And through the process, as Nick described, he lost his friends and his family, nobody, and lost contact with your children, didn't you?
Yeah.
When he was in the hostel, somebody explained to him about Facebook.
This thing called Facebook. I didn't know anything about it. Sorry.
And in the journey of building back up again, on the Sunday after your birthday, there was a party at the Dolphin Pub in Betchworth.
My kids, my middle daughter, arranged this whole event. And Dad, don't have to worry about a taxi. Don't have to worry about putting your hand in your pocket. We've got it covered. They picked me up. Then, as we got to the pub restaurant in Betchworth, another car turned up with my brother-in-law. And another car turned up with, what are they doing? Coming to, there's about 25 of us. And my two daughters' husbands, when the bill came, passed it over to us. Didn't have to dip my hand in my pocket. They took care of everything. We drank quite a bit of wine. We had quite a bit of lovely food. And I didn't have to drive home. So reconciliation stage two. But stage two only happens because of going to the hostel in Leatherhead that got me onto Facebook. Because I have a rather strange surname. There weren't many people with that surname on the internet. All the ones that are related to me, or I'm related to them. So that was the best birthday present I could wish for, because that's the first time I've had a birthday present like that in 20 years. Everything went tits up when I was 40, and now 63.
So an amazing journey that Nick has been on, and thank you for your honesty and your being prepared to share that with us.
I've gone one stage further. Not only did I do that list of my 3-month goals, one of them was to write a book. I've now, because when I was in the hostel, it gave me access to computer, and there was a thing called Creative Workshop. I attended it every Wednesday. Got to 6,000 words, all the truth in there. So people say, oh, you can't put that in there. So if I make it bland, no one's going to buy it. I've got to put everything in it. Have you seen The Wolf of Wall Street, anybody? Okay, right, one sec. Hear me out on that one. Got that on DVD, took it home about a year ago. I watched it 3 times in one night, one after the other. Next morning, I wrote a little note to my ex-wife, dropped it off at her house. And they basically said something like this. You thought I was bad, a bit extreme. Compared to this dude, I'm about a 2 out of 10 beginner Boy Scout. This is the master. This is what you could have been married to. So that's only probably the ones to make on that one.
I think the other thing that always strikes me about Nick is you'd really do have an ability to count your blessings. So when he tells the story about his leg, he'll always say, but yeah, look, it's pretty useless, but I've got it. And you talk about your right hand, which is not...
Yeah, I've got a good useless one. Go down to Sainsbury's, buy your bag of shopping, put that on there. No one's going to nick that off me. No one's going to nick the bag off me, because that is clamped on now. I've got the good hand to do whatever else I need to do. Like, for instance, maybe like a cigarette.
So do we want to do Q&A? Yeah. I don't know if there's anyone... it's an amazing story. Has anyone got any questions for Nick?
Should we use the mic for questions? Yeah, because we're going to try and record bits back. So if I grab that. So has anyone got a question they want to ask Nick about his life?
I've got one at the front. And by the way, guys, you can ask me any question you want. You'll get an honest answer, and I'll offer that to you. I'm not someone that, I can't tell them that. It's a bit like the book. If I don't put everything in it, No one's going to buy it. So you've got to learn everything, the good and the bad.
Nick, what advice do you have for people like me who commute to work and pass homeless people every day, see them every day, feel a little bit guilty, walk by? You know, what do you think we should say or do, or in terms of a change of heart?
Yeah, I've got an idea. Right. It's a generalisation, but most people on the street have had a checkered life. And mostly they want a bit of money. They would generally, and I'm being honest about this, they would want to buy some booze, or they want to buy some cigarettes, or they want us to buy some drugs. That's not everyone, but a lot will. So, if you've got that concern, and I totally understand that, go and buy them a sandwich and maybe a coffee and give them something like that. That's what I think is a kind way of being a fair and nice person and also helping someone else, obviously, in distress. But I wouldn't give someone just cash straight away, because the truth is they probably will spend it on drink. If someone would give me a tenner, I would have bought 10 cigarettes first and thought, well, I can buy a bottle of wine for £5, sod the sandwich. That's what I would have done when I was in that situation. Didn't cure anything, didn't solve anything. Just gave me an hour or so off my mental torment. So that's my advice. Buy them something productive.
I've got a question here. So during the spiral of the business collapsing, what might or could or who would have made a difference in your life that perhaps you would have made different choices?
Well, in my opinion, the only person that could make a difference was me. I didn't see some rich godfather or some benevolent government grant saying, oh, we'll bail you out for a while, high interest rates, but pay it back. I saw the only way to make things change is to take everything on my shoulders. I've got the ability, I've got a bit of youth still, I've got the drive. I am not going to give in. If I do give in, it won't be because I've given in, it's because someone steamrolled over me. Or the three guys in the park in Croydon beat me up when I resisted letting them have my phone. I didn't win that one. But I wasn't damn well going to give it away. You know, there's something inside of me that says, I can make a difference. That's probably the most honest way of saying it. And if I don't make the difference, it will not be through lack of trying. I'm not going to push the buck. I'm going to pass it on to anybody else. It's called being responsible.
Yeah. I mean, one of the reasons we wanted to start Shed Time, do this event for men, is to make sure, or to try and stop the downward spiral of individuals. So if someone was in a difficult situation, that there would be support of other guys around that they can talk to, that they might be able to share with. Do you think, if that structure had existed for you, would that have helped? Or there were the friends you referred to earlier on, you very much just felt isolated and felt, as you said, you had to sort it on your own. Could that have been different, I suppose, or are we kind of wasting our time? I've kind of dug myself a grave here, really.
Well, I'm going to tie something in. I came to this building next door 40 years ago. I got married in that church next door 40 years ago. I look at my life and I think, where the hell did that go? I can remember distinctly. I can remember going to Leg of Mutton Pub, pretending I wasn't going to go to a wedding. I hid my suit hidden in the car. I said, just come down for a drink, boys. We're going to your wedding. Oh, am I? It's all made up. Anyway, I did have my tuxedo and everything, and it was great. But where the hell did those 40 years go? They've flown by. Lots happened. A lot's happened.
So is there a friend that could have helped you?
Okay, I can't say God helped me, because I have challenges with God. But when I went to AA meetings, I said I've got a challenge with using a God word all the time. A lady gave me a really helpful bit of information. She said, G-O-D, going in orderly direction. And I bought that one 100%. So that's how I live my life. I like a plan. I like it written down, so it's not just airy-fairy down the pub talk. I'm going to do this. No, there it is, written down. And I'm going to put everything in place to get to that next step, till I get to that destination. And I've done 6,000 letters of my book. But you're going to have to buy it to find out all the stories, because I'm not giving it away free.
So the story is absolutely compelling, and I admire the way that you've taken the problems of the world through your eyes on your shoulders. And it's clear that you provided for your family in the very good times that you clearly had. But did you ever share with your wife, certainly within my life, the rock that I lean upon through some very troubled times, I hasten to add, when it started to go wrong? And if you did, I'd love to hear about it. And if you didn't, do you reflect upon that?
Unfortunately, she wasn't my rock. There's a lot of emotion in there. She wasn't my rock. My rocks actually were my business partners, men. And they were strange. One was American. And this is quite avant-garde what we used to do. We used to meet in the Vanderbilt Hotel every Sunday in the month. And it was called the men's group. And we used to do what women do. Women chat about emotions and feelings. Men don't do that. My partner and I opened up a group where we did that. We could talk about anything to anybody and encourage men to be able to do that. And they found it very, very difficult. They weren't lubricated with a glass of wine. It was all teetotal. And trying to get these men, they were powerful men. We had the chairman of TVAM there. We had John Cleese was a member of the group. Martin Shaw, the actor. People you knew of. And I found it very interesting, very avant-garde, very new. A bit of California, maybe. But think pink in Yosemite Valley. That just open your heart to the people. Don't hide behind a facade, an image, how you're supposed to be. Put your armour on. When I used to go to work, my wife said, "Oh, you've got your armour on." My armour was my £59 suit, my £16,000 gold Rolex, my £1,000 leather shoes, leopard skin or whatever they were, my whatever buckle was. I had armour on. That, unless you knew what the armour was, you just saw a bloke wearing a suit. But to me, when I put that on, I was invincible. In my head, that gave me inner confidence. So when someone says to me, I'll give you one quick story, right? So I'm going off the script. Went down my local pub, Kingswood Arms, a few years ago. My friend Paul, one of the dads from school's there. He said, "Nick, you've got a mountain bike, haven't you?" I said, Yeah, but I was trying to get fit. But yeah, it's in the garage. He said, "Well, you're a bit crazy. We are doing this cycle ride across England, sponsored by Pepsi Cola. Got raised 100 grand, and we're all doing it. We've been training for 3 months. One of the blokes has just dropped out. Another glass of wine. When is it?" "It's next week." "You've been training for 3 months? "Yep." "All right, Paul, I'll have one more drink with you. I'll phone you tonight. You phone me tonight." Go home. Sunday roast is all lovely. "Hello, don't touch that." "Oh, I had a great time down the pub, saw Paul. He's challenged me to cycle across England." "When?" "Next week." "Says you smoke, you drink, they've been training for 3 months. Yeah, you're going to do that." "Straight on the phone, Paul, I'm in. And by the way, I did it. And I raised 10 grand. So I said to people who said you can't do it, because I'm a bit of a rebel, and I did what I said I would do. I did get a bit of a sore bum, but, you know. And and because of my press credentials, we had the front page, all 14 of us, in the sea, shore, and it was in the front of the Surrey Mirror, front of Levitt Advertiser, everywhere. And it was to all those doughty Tommies, it says, "Oh, he's useless, he just drinks and smokes. He can't do that." I did it. It's got to be done, hasn't it?
We've got one more question. I've got one, Nick. I mean, it's Christmas time. Homelessness is obviously a focus in the newspapers and in the press and everything else. I mean,
could you just explain what it's like to be sleeping rough? What goes through your mind, what your emotions are like, what is, you know, if you had to say, if we're trying to get into
I've got it. Yep, I can. I do it in two ways. Right. It's the most depressing day of your life. Whatever weather conditions you've got, it's Christmas Day. Somebody should be caring. Right. Fast forward backwards. I was born in Sutton Coalfield. Moved down here when I was about two. My grandmother lived in this massive great house with a lake in the garden. Massive. She was Catholic, so she had loads of kids. So I got 32 cousins, 16 uncles and aunts, all Catholics. They all went into the military, most of the RAF. They're stationed all around the world. Every Christmas, the RAF or the army would fly them all back from Hong Kong, Saudi Arabia, all the places they were, Cyprus, all come to Granny's house, Birmingham, Selly Oak. That was a magical Christmas. All these uncles and aunts coming, bringing strange things from foreign lands, all sorts of stories. And then, the big house, good families trying to carry on the tradition too, the reality of it's Christmas Day. I ain't going to listen to the Queen's speech because I haven't got a telly. I'm in a bus stop, or I'm in Sainsbury's car park, or I'm wandering around at 3 o'clock in the morning freezing cold. It's the day to commit suicide, if you're brave enough to do it. I wasn't brave enough to do it, like with cutting your wrist, rope. I wasn't brave enough for that. That's why I took the soft option, pills and alcohol. Thank God it didn't work. Don't feel like that now. But Christmas, this is... Meet you there. Tough.
Nick, thank you. We're going to have a
break now for 5-10 minutes. You can, grab a drink, and maybe some more food. I think we've even splashed out and bought some chocolates because it's Christmas. And then we're going to come back and we're going to meet some new people with some other stories to share. Cheers, and give Nick a big hand. I think. Thank you very much.